From WXXI News, this is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Our connection for this half hour will be made sometime over the next several months. The Buffalo Bills will have a new owner. Then, this coming winter, that owner will fire the general manager and head coach, installing a new regime. That is, if history is any guide. New owners almost always want their own hand-picked team to lead the way. And that's why there was so much intrigue into this past weekend for the Bills. First, you had the NFL commissioner confirming that the Bills would stay in Western New York, really, if there is a sparkling new stadium, likely leading to hundreds of millions of dollars to be paid by local taxpayers. Then there were questions about if the Bills' management would take bold moves in the NFL draft to make the team a contender this fall and maybe, save their own jobs with whomever the new owner might be. Lots to talk about. Join the conversation if you like. We can talk about the taxpayer angle, the stadium angle. Here's your chance to talk about the moves that the Bills made. Journalist and author Scott Pitoniak helps us break down sports, and he's in studio once again. Good to see you, Scott.
Good to see you, Evan.
Very exciting. When's the last time a Bills draft weekend was this exciting?
Yeah, there was, Doug Whaley, this was his first, go-around here as general manager and making the picks. And man, he turned out to be a wheeler and dealer. He was like, the analogy is he's like the quarterback, the gunslinging quarterback who went out there. We're throwing deep on the first snap from scrimmage. Three trades in 3 days, and the biggest one obviously being trading up on just shortly after the draft started, really the first round to acquire the rights to Sammy Watkins, who a wide receiver whom they're hoping is going to be, I guess, one of the saviors of this franchise.
I wonder if the Bills management felt like we've got to operate like we're down 3 touchdowns in the fourth quarter because our jobs are on the line, and if we're 7-9 again or 8-8 or 9-7, we're not sticking around.
Yeah. Oh, I think that, I mean, they tell you otherwise publicly, but there's no question. I mean, a new boss is coming in, and as you said at the outset, there are going to be changes made, and they're going to be more likely to bring their own people in. You've got to give them a reason not to, and that is to end this 14-year playoff famine and show some life here. And it was extremely bold that first night in particular.
It's 844-295-TALK. It's toll-free, 844-295-8255. Or in the Rochester area, 263-WXXI, 263-9994. Reading the article that has Roger Goodell's comments about a stadium, Scott, and we've talked about this, but now we might have known it, that this league is going to expect Western New York to pay for a new stadium for the Bills in order to keep them, but now we're getting that confirmation from the NFL commissioner, and it doesn't feel like great timing right on the heels of a $130 million stadium renovation. I mean, so Western New York taxpayers are already throwing $130 million. Well, I mean, certainly the state may end up helping, but that's a lot of money already to renovate, and the commissioner saying that's not nearly good enough.
Yeah. I guess I'm one of the lone voices here I just start blanching when I hear about corporate welfare again, and that's what we've seen like time and time again. There's no doubt the commissioner put the gun to the the heads of the taxpayers, essentially. And it seems like, this is going to go through. Look at, Andrew Cuomo, has expedited things now in terms of getting, this commission ready to start, looking for, potential sites. I mean, he's really pushed everything up real quickly because they want to have, most of these things ready to go when that, new owner is named and approved by the NFL.
Is there a sense at least the commissioner confirm what we already knew? We won't spend months or years saying maybe they'll stay without a stadium. Everybody knows the chips are on the table now. We all know the cards are on the table. I don't know what metaphor I'd like to use here, but the bottom line is we all know the circumstances.
Yeah. And again, I don't know what the one thing we saw with the renovations is that I guess the one good thing that came out of that is that Ralph Wilson signed off and the NFL signed off on, this lease that at least buys them some time. It's keeping them here, as we found out, at least through the 2019 season, because there's that $400 million penalty if they attempt, and no owner is going to move it. And then there's that one-year, escape clause, essentially, for chump change, $28 million you can get out. So it's going to be – I find this fascinating because – you know, the governor isn't just going to give away everything. I mean, it's, you know, it's going to be really intriguing to see if they can structure this new stadium agreement, you know, so that it is ironclad to keep the team here. But I'll throw this out.
That would be how horrifying would it be to build a stadium and they still move the franchise?
Right, right. They've got to be some protection for, you know, the taxpayers of Western New York. But how about this, Evan? Let's say like they get that ironclad, you know, let's say it's a $500 million escape clause that is going to, you know, preclude anybody from moving. And let's say the team doesn't support, or the fan base doesn't support the team. Let's say they're, you know, they build this 60,000 seat stadium and they're drawing 30,000 and they're being blacked out and so forth. And, you know, the new owner can no longer operate here. What happens? You know, it's strange.
I can't see fans not going to that stadium, a new stadium, though. Could you?
But what if this team continues to be among the dregs of the NFL, as it has for 14 years? You know, I mean, people aren't going to keep going. And the other thing I'll throw at you, Evan, is things are going to be a lot more expensive for the fan. I'll throw this out. When the NCAA was here just recently in Buffalo, the NCAA basketball tournament, parking prices, you know, for blocks near the, you know, First Niagara Center, were going for $50 and $40 a piece, and people were up in arms. What do you think it's going to cost for a downtown waterfront stadium to park, or, you know, Niagara Falls? I mean, where parking might be limited or whatever.
Build a stadium in Niagara Falls.
Well, they're talking about that. They're talking about they believe that the now Southern Ontario has surpassed Rochester just slightly as the secondary market now for the Buffalo Bills. So they want to be closer to, obviously, that secondary market.
What are they getting for that $100 million plus to renovate the current stadium?
Well, you're going to have wider concourses and better bathrooms and, you know, a greater variety of concessions. It's going to be easier to move in and around the stadium. You're going to have better technology in the stadium. You know, that stadium is wired, but it's like hit or miss. You're going to have, you know, more bells and whistles in terms of having, you know, new video screens, you know, that mm-hmm. sort of thing. It's dressing it up, but it's a Band-Aid, you know.
It's a $100 million plus 6-year Band-Aid.
Yeah.
6 years for that stuff. Whew.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, this is sadly the game that's played, you know, and if you don't want to play it, we'll pick up our franchise and take it someplace else. It's, you know,
and that's the confirmation that NFL Commissioner Roger Goodell essentially gave. And that now we know that's where things stand. Now, if you want to join the conversation on that, or you want to weigh in on what you thought about the Bills' moves in the draft, this is one of our rare times to talk a little bit of sports here with Scott Pitoniak, a journalist and author. And you can read Scott in the Rochester Business Journal, among many other places. And the Bills had a very exciting draft. It started with this clip. It's the fourth pick in the draft. The Bills are supposed to be picking 9. And Roger Goodell, the NFL commissioner, announces this.
The Cleveland Browns have traded the fourth pick to the Buffalo Bills. With the fourth pick in the 2014 NFL Draft, the Buffalo Bills select Sammy Watkins, wide receiver, Clemson.
When do you get that kind of reaction for a Bills pick, Scott? That excitement is, I know that they think there's a lot of value in that excitement.
Yeah, you know what was interesting? I saw some figures they were talking about that the Bills were the most tweeted team during the NFL draft. That move, you know, really got people excited. And we talk about, you know, even Russ Brandon admitted this, you know, last 2 Januaries ago. He talked about the Bills not being, you know, relevant in the grand scheme of things in the NFL. Well, that was a move that, you know, got people's attention and stuff. So and I think it energized the fan base here as well, because there's still this great feeling that, you know, EJ Manuel, the you know, second year quarterback, is not the guy, you know, to lead them to the promised land.
We're going to find out now, aren't we?
Yeah, we're definitely going to find out now. I mean, one of the big things was, you know, get as many weapons as you possibly can to surround, you know, EJ with, And there's no more excuses. I mean, we talk about, you know, the front office and the coaching staff's jobs being on the line. Well, so is the legacy of E.J. Manuel. It's make or break for him right now.
Interestingly enough, the Bills then turned around and traded the player who's been their best receiver for several seasons. The last season that was debatable, it's Stevie Johnson. And, you know, Scott, I hear up and down things about Stevie. I hear that when he's in the grocery line, he will buy the groceries for the people behind him and sign a game ball and leave it with them, and that he gets the fan experience and he wants them to be happy and he cares about people. And then you also see the guy who's consistently in big moments let the team down and occasionally looked a little too me. So is this addition by subtraction, or will losing Stevie hurt them?
No, I think that this was a move that needed to be made. I think it's going to be beneficial for both parties, Evan. I think he's going to a Super Bowl contender in the San Francisco 49ers. He's got a chance to revive his career. And I think it was time to move on. You look at the Bills, now you add Sammy Watkins, who's obviously a starter. He's your starter. He's your number one receiver coming in. And you've got some young receivers who in the second year, you know, people like Robert Woods and Marquise Goodwin, whom they drafted last year, they need playing time. And Stevie was going to take away from that. Or if these guys were going to get playing time and take it away from Stevie, you could have had a very toxic situation in that locker room. And so I think this was a good move, and it was the move at the right time for the Bills to make.
Obviously, if Sammy Watkins doesn't turn out to be one of the top five receivers in the league for the next 10 years, it's going to be too heavy a price to pay that the Bills paid to get him. Mm-hmm. But knowing that their jobs may be on the line, how do you grade the draft for the Bills?
Well, Evan, I've covered 30 Bills drafts, and I've learned in probably the last 5 to 10 years. But the first grade I always give, you know, when the perspiration is barely evaporated on a draft, is incomplete.
Absolutely.
And you know, I mean, I've been through this too much. I've seen people get excited about Mike Williams, the tackle from Texas, being drafted third overall. I've seen Aaron Maben, the Penn State linebacker. You know, I've seen J.P. Lossman. I've seen these moves on draft day, which is always a tremendously hopeful day for every franchise in the NFL. I've just seen these guys turn into bust. And there's no mystery here why the Bills have been out of the playoffs for 14 consecutive years. The biggest number one reason is they have drafted poorly. You've got to have talent, and they've just totally blown it on evaluating talent.
Professor Patoniak, too much wisdom. I wanted a grade. But Mike in Rochester, thanks for calling. Mike, go ahead.
Gentlemen, I have a theory that the NFL wants the current stadium changed because it's really the stadium that O.J. Simpson created. That Orchard Park came about with O.J. Simpson, and now that he's such a mark on the NFL, I think the NFL is probably trying to change the image of Buffalo, especially with the death of Mr. Wilson. There's almost like a new era coming.
Well, Scott, I don't even think about O.J. anymore, do you?
No, that's not the reason at all. I mean, he's absolutely right. Like, you know, O.J.'s run to stardom and so forth coincided with the opening of then Rich Stadium back in 1973. But that has nothing to do with it. Believe me, what it all comes down to, dollars and cents. Remember that this is a socialistic system here in the NFL. And, you know, when they have a weak franchise, you know,
with a 40-year-old stadium
there, you know, the other 31 owners are not maximizing their revenues.
Yeah, that's probably right. You want to join the conversation, 844-295-TALK. It's toll-free, 844-295-8255 or 263-WXXI. The other move of the night, and we already had a question on Twitter on what we think about this guy. You know, Buffalo made a lot of noise on draft night, and so did another franchise. And let's listen to the second clip and listen to the reaction on this one.
With the 22nd pick in the 2014 NFL Draft, the Cleveland Browns select Johnny Manziel, quarterback, Texas A&M.
The people going nuts there are not even Browns fans, Scott. Mm-hmm. He is that much of a celebrity. And I say celebrity over star at this point, and I, as a Browns fan, I hope I'm wrong. What kind of reaction is that? That was almost crazy to me.
Yeah, you hit it right on the head there, that he is a celebrity, and he's also a very polarizing figure. in a different way, but, you know, somewhat similar in respects to like Tim Tebow was. He's a guy that is going to, no matter what, I can see like that, you know, the first mini camp and stuff, you know, they're going to document every throw he makes in practice. And, you know, we're going to have nonstop coverage of Johnny Football. You know, I feel, looking at this from an outsider, this was clearly an owner's pick. I think this was an owner overruling his coach, his scouting staff. He was enamored of this guy. But there's no question. I mean, look at the impact he's had already in terms of season ticket sales.
2,500 season tickets sold in a day.
Yeah. I mean, and you know, I was looking, like they talked about this being one of the highest rated draft coverage of all time on ESPN, and they were able to track it during the hours. And when it got to that point where the Dallas Cowboys were getting ready to pick and Johnny Manziel's still there and Jerry Jones, the Cowboys owner, had like, you know, just, you know, talked on and on and on about how great it would be to have this Texas boy in Texas, it went through the roof from that point right up until the point where the Browns drafted him. The ratings were incredible for you know, really, if you step back, you know, what is this all about, this draft? It's become this cottage industry here that's you know, really captivated
people.
It's
storytelling, yeah. And they found a way to do it. James writes and says, Scott says the Bills made a splash by moving up to get Sammy Watkins. Couldn't they have made a bigger splash by staying at 9 and taking Johnny Manziel?
Well, yeah, they would have made a bigger splash, but would it have been right for them? Here's the thing. I don't know. You don't know. Even though people have given up on E.J. Manuel because he had a truncated season, you know, due to three different knee injuries and so forth, and played only 10 games last year. We don't know if he's the guy or not. But I do know this. Doug Whaley, Russ Brandon, and Doug Marrone believe he's the guy. They're all in on him. If they weren't all in on him, they would have looked at a quarterback. They would have looked to maybe trade up to get Bortles, or they would have maybe tried to make that move, you know, for a Manziel or someone else, a Teddy Bridgewater, whatever. They're all in, and they may go down with them as well.
When you watched the coverage of the draft on ESPN, every segment in and out, they bumped with the same song. And look, Scott and I may not be the most up to date on popular music. I try. I'm not very up to date on it. But the song had the lyrics, "I'm the man, I'm the man, I'm the man." And I thought, I'm concerned that that's a great anthem for the next generation of sports. And I'm trying not to be too curmudgeonly when I say that, but did that strike you at all, Scott? Like, you got Johnny Manziel walking out, and he's already given his dollar sign symbol, and you picked it 22nd. You know, is there a little bit of a me-first notion?
Well, you know, I try to, as a student of history, you know, when it's always dangerous whenever you say, like, this has never happened before, or you worry, you know, Joe Namath, I'm old enough to remember, you know, that he was kind of the Johnny Manziel, you know, 10 times over, with the fur coat and the Broadway Joe image and the Playboy image and everything, and signed for then the obscene amount of money of $400,000 to go to the upstart AFL, and really, you know, that was a move that made the AFL true contenders, you know, and competitors with the, so I don't know. I mean, I do worry at times. The thing that bothers me is that sports, I know it's entertainment and so forth, but I just, this whole thing, the draft is wretched excess. I mean, if you really boil it down, I just look back and I hear all these people doing all this analysis and stuff, Evan, and, you know, I get tweets and emails from readers, you know, and they're saying, well, this guy, you know, he runs a 4.43 and, you know, he you know, and they've never seen him play a single game.
Right.
They
right.
didn't even see him play in college, you know, and you know, so that's why, like, I'm always, and the people who have seen and know everything about this guy, including his first girlfriend back in the fourth grade,
yeah.
and, you know, and he stole so-and-so's lunch money. And I mean, they get it wrong. They get it wrong. And I always, the you know, classic example is, you know, Tom Brady. You know, for the genius that Bill Belichick, the coach of the New England Patriots, is supposed to be, they lucked into that. They totally lucked into that. If, you know, what'd they think? He was going to be available in the sixth round, you know, so we'll wait and pick all these other guys? No, they had no clue that this guy was going to develop and become one of the greatest quarterbacks in the history of the game. No clue. No clue.
We're talking to Scott Pitoniak, journalist and author, about the NFL draft weekend and the one other big storyline. And as Scott said, the NFL has done a good job of making it about the storylines. But it was interesting to watch whether Michael Sam would get drafted. The first openly gay player in the league, and he was. He was drafted, I think, 7 or 8 picks from the end of the draft. Mm-hmm. He is a defensive end from Missouri, 11.5 sacks this year, one of the top players in one the best conference in football, and yet goes later in the draft. And I get why. The interesting thing to me, Scott, was watching all the analysts explain, hey, if he doesn't get drafted, it's not because he's gay. It's because he's a tweener and it's hard to find a position. I mean, at this time, they're drafting guys from Towson State and all these things, and Michael Sam was going to stay on the board. I wasn't buying it that it was only because of his ability.
Yeah. I mean, to think that, attitudes are just going to be totally changed, I think, is somewhat naive. I mean, there's still a machismo attitude in locker rooms and in draft war rooms and so forth. I think people are more open-minded and more enlightened. But to think that, again, that, all attitudes, negative attitudes, have been eradicated is to be quite naive, I think.
Well, and here's something else I did not know until this morning. When Michael Sam was, and he was drafted by the St. Louis Rams, and they had, as they often do, video cameras in his house and where he was, and it was this intensely emotional reaction, because if you're drafted in the NFL, you often get a phone call. You hear from someone with the team that, you're going to come play for us. Well, Michael Sam gets that call, and he is almost doubled over in tears, just so excited. You can hear him saying, yes, sir, yes, sir, yes, sir, and so excited. And gentleman who I assume is his boyfriend was next to him, had his arm around him, and when he finally hangs up the call, he hugged him and collapsed in tears, and they shared a kiss. ESPN has edited that video, so when they share the Michael Sam reaction shot now, you don't see the kiss.
Oh, my gosh.
I don't know if ESPN saying, well, it was a long reaction and we just wanted a short reaction.
Yeah.
But I don't think I've ever seen ESPN edit it out, say, a 22-year-old athlete kissing a girlfriend, right?
No.
So I wonder where we are.
Yeah. And there was, it was a player, I believe, on the Dolphins who tweeted out, something, negative after,
about the kiss?
Yeah, after Sam was drafted,
I
think.
After the draft, yeah.
And is now suspended, briefly as a result of that. Of course, given the problems with the Dolphins and bullying and everything else on that team, that's totally dysfunctional.
They're a bit of a mess, yeah.
Yeah, so they will react to things. But, yeah, it's, there's still some education that needs to be done in this country. There's no question about it.
Scott Pitoniak's here for a few more minutes talking about the Bills draft and the Bills news and news for taxpayers, a lot of different angles here. And then in the second half hour of this hour, we're going to be talking about the upcoming Empire State Pride Agenda's annual spring dinner. It's in Rochester on Saturday, and we're going to talk to a state senator who is going to be keynoting that. He's going to join the conversation with us here. But Scott, now let's go ahead and let's look ahead to the season here. The Bills have to be in the playoffs to be considered a success, especially for their regime. But now, is it realistic with this roster, or is it still a stretch?
I don't think they're that far away. It's all dependent on EJ Manuel. I mean, we've heard time and time again that with the rules changes and so forth, this is such a quarterback driven league now, and they've got a solid defense. I think they've done some upgrades there, with Brandon Spikes, a freelance guy. But again, it comes back to it's EJ's time. It's now or never. The NFL, the people like to joke that, only partially in jest, that the NFL stands for not for long league. And I think that takes on an even greater meaning. It's interesting. I think the Bills' slogan this year is "This is our time." And they have a picture of EJ Manuel, and it better be, when I look at that, it's all going to come down to him. He doesn't have to be Tom Brady or Peyton Manning. He just has to be a little bit better, above average, and they're close enough, to make the playoffs. I mean, they lost a number of close games last year. It is a cliche, but it is so true, that there's not a great degree of difference between a bad team and a good team in the NFL. I mean, there is parity in the league.
One reason that I sort of find myself hoping that EJ succeeds, not just because I sort of by default I'm a Bills fan, but he defies some of what I talked about earlier in that this generation of I'm the man, I'm the man, I'm the man. EJ is actually, I've heard so many interviews with him, even when he was going through the draft process a year ago, and I thought, that guy sounds like a leader. Mm-hmm. He sounds like he is confident but humble and has gratitude. And I want people like that to succeed. Are we too addicted to looking at the character, Scott? You know?
Yeah, we've kind of always been that way. And maybe more so now, Evan, because we're in such a culture of celebrity. You know, and we have been for a number of years.
Well, I want to like the people we root for, you know?
Yeah, yeah. There's nothing wrong with that. I mean, it's nothing wrong with having good people do well. And you're right. He is. He's handled himself very well. And he is well-liked by his teammates. He has natural leadership skills. It's not a put-on. And I think that his teammates, do want to see him lead. But there comes a point in sports, competitive sports, where you got to put up and you got to produce. And we're at that day of reckoning for him, or season of reckoning.
Always nice to talk to you, Scott.
Always nice talking to you, Evan.
And where do we find your work?
RBJ.net. I'm doing stuff with WROC, Channel 8, their website, RochesterHomepage.net. Bookstores, USA Today, Sports Weekly. I'll be writing for them again.
Well, at least it'll be exciting this year, as it always is.
Should be.
Scott Pitoniak covers sports for us here, helps us understand the world of sports around us. The shortest break in radio, and then we're going to come back and talk about what's coming up on Saturday the 17th. We've got State Senator Brad Hoyleman on the phone with us, and we're going to talk about that next on Connections. Tuesday on the next Connections, it's the final of our series on specialty drinks in Western New York. We've done the cocktail revival scene, the Finger Lakes wine scene, the specialty coffee scene, the third wave. And Tuesday, we look at the craft beer scene with the man who's writing the book on the Rochester and Finger Lakes beer scene, along with some of the people behind the great local beers. It's all coming up on Tuesday on Connections.
Designers, programmers, and engineers, watch out. There's a new crop of eager workers, and they're only in high school.
I know there's a lot of places opening up around here. GE is always an option, Evident Technologies.
I'm David Gura, preparing students for the jobs of the future, next time on Marketplace from APM.
This evening at 6:30.
I'm Evan Dawson. Welcome back to Connections. Coming up on Saturday, the 17th of May here in Rochester, it's the Empire State Pride Agenda's annual spring dinner. And the keynote for that evening will be provided by State Senator Brad Hoyleman, who's on the phone with us now. Brad, thanks for joining us on Connections. Nice to talk to you.
Nice to talk to you, Evan.
Are you a football fan, Brad?
Of course, who isn't?
Did you follow the fortune? We were just talking about, among many other issues, the Michael Sam saga. The first openly gay player in the NFL was drafted, and I'm curious to know if you followed his story this weekend.
I did, absolutely. It was incredibly heartening to see someone of his prominence in a sport that is largely, at least stereotypically, not welcoming to gay men, to be drafted, and also the reception that he received from the public, and of course his partner.
Yeah, the video. Just try to imagine this country where we were decades ago versus today, and I don't know much about his partner, but they're obviously different races, and you've got this video of a different race couple, same-sex couple, embracing, sharing that moment, going to the NFL. World's changed a little, hasn't it, Senator Hoyleman?
I believe so. I think Archie Bunker would not be pleased, and and I actually think that's a good thing. I think actually Archie Bunker may have even come around to himself, as have a lot of people in our society in such a short time, and that would include a lot of my family members, too, who once they understand that this is really about love and commitment and making families, then they totally support the efforts of LGBT people to have full equality. And that's also in professional sports as well.
Well, you are going to be touching on a number of issues in your keynote on Saturday here in Rochester, and I want to touch on a number of those with you because our audience might not be totally familiar with them. So let's go over the short list here. For example, the Gender Expression Non-Discrimination Act, known as GENDA. What is it, and tell us about what you'll be talking about on Saturday there.
Well, there is a group of folks in our community who are transgender. They have a medical condition where they are born into a different gender than they aspire to. And under the law in New York, those individuals do not have the same protections as every other New Yorker. For example, transgender individuals could be fired from a job. They could lose their home. They could even be denied a seat in a restaurant simply because they're transgender. Now, a lot of our local municipalities have protections for transgender individuals, but the fact is about 24,000 transgender individuals live in counties and villages that don't have these protections, and we're trying to fight for their rights. It really is one of the last horizons of gay, lesbian, and transgender equality.
The last time we talked about transgender issues on this program was about 2 months ago, and it was in the wake of a story that was published on Grantland.com about the inventor of a golf club who happened to be transgender, and the writer of the story outed her in the story, and she, in the course of his research, he let her know that he was going to be outing her, and she begged him not to, and he did, and she committed suicide. And that story went viral. When we talked about it on this program, we had a comment from a listener named John who sent me a note that said the following, and I want to read it to you, Senator Hoylman. It said, quote, "Transgender does not merit being included in the gay rights movement. It is something else entirely, and I don't know why we continue to talk about it as if it's the same." What do you say to that, Senator Hoylman?
Well, you know, I say that while transgender individuals have a unique experience, just as gays and lesbians may have different experiences, they have been part of our LGBT community since the Stonewall riots back in the 60s. In fact, it were transgender individuals who initiated the rebellion against the NYPD on that evening in New York City. And today, see in the news that even the Secretary of Defense, Chuck Hagel, is considering reviewing the ban on transgender individuals in our military. To me, there's nothing more American than serving your country, and I'm very happy that our military really is becoming the forefront of protecting the rights of LGBT individuals, and that will now hopefully include transgender individuals.
When it comes to the Gender Expression Non-Discrimination Act, I imagine a lot of the thought that goes into this keeps in mind the statistics, which indicate that transgender people have very high rates of attempted suicide and very low rates of employment, and it has been a devastating fact for that community, hasn't it?
It completely is, and it's a difficult struggle for a lot of transgender young people. I see it in my district on the west side of Manhattan, where young people come from all parts of the metro area to Manhattan because they've been rejected by their family, by their loved ones and their friends. Many of them live homeless on our streets, and we really need to look out for these kids, provide them the protections and the services, make them contributing members of our society that, you know, they, for no fault of their own, have been born with a specific medical condition. And it is confirmed by science, and we should do everything we can to make certain that they lead fulfilling lives.
Richard writes to us asking, saying, "I feel badly for people who feel like their natural gender is wrong, but shouldn't we treat this as a mental disorder?" That's what Richard writes.
It's certainly no more of a mental disorder than, you know, having blue eyes and brown hair might be. These are attributes that we're born with. These young people should be proud of who they are and who they aspire to be. And as we learn more about the transgender community in our culture and our society, I think we'll find that, you know, there really are very few differences among your transgender people and everyone else in society. I think it's people through bigotry and lack of understanding that want to label transgender folks as, you know, something out of the ordinary or something different because they don't understand. And, you know, we saw it, Evan, with gays and lesbians 25 years ago. That's why I think it really is the last frontier for gaining full equality for our community.
We're talking to State Senator Brad Hoylman, who will provide the evening's keynote on Saturday at the Rochester Riverside Convention Center as part of the Empire State Pride Agenda's annual spring dinner. And he's talking about a number of the issues that he will be talking about on Saturday here in Rochester. Among them, he's also going to talk about conversion therapy. I know that that has been in the news in recent years, but remind our listeners what conversion therapy ostensibly is, Senator.
Yes. So, Evan, there are licensed medical therapists in the state of New York and elsewhere who actually try to convert young people from being straight, from being gay into straight. It's not therapy. Because it is very destructive to the self-esteem of these young folks, and it doesn't work. Nobody is converted from being gay to straight. Just as you know, you could not convert someone from being straight to gay. What is particularly insidious about this practice is that it is often underground. It does operate. Preys on the desperation of parents who are looking for really any avenue to help their son or daughter. And because you have a license to practice medicine, it should mean that you have the right to exploit those fears and the misunderstanding on the part of a lot of well-meaning parents who want to protect their kids. So we're trying to ban the practice in New York by licensed therapists on young people. Doesn't have anything to do with religion. We're talking about licensed therapists in the state of New York.
What would the penalty be, and what kind of, essentially what kind of a penalty are we talking about under this legislation?
You could lose your license, and that's the same kind of penalty that has been passed in California and survived scrutiny by a federal court and passed in New Jersey and signed into law by a Republican governor. We see this as a nonpartisan issue. This is, again, about protecting kids, protecting our LGBT kids who, for no fault of their own, have been born, I would say gifted, with certain attributes, whether they be gay, straight, bisexual, or transgender.
And Senator, you mentioned California with conversion therapy. I think that's where some of the more prominent stories we've seen in the news are regarding these attempts of therapists to conduct conversion therapy. But again, for the listeners who are skeptical that this practice exists in New York State, you're saying it does.
It does, and I've spoken to some former patients who have endured it, and that is the right word, Evan, endured it, because some of them have had terrible things performed on them under the guise of medicine. Look, the American Psychological Association, among other professional psychological and psychiatric organizations, have condemned this practice as being destructive. Can you imagine what it would do to your self-esteem if someone who is wearing a white coat, in effect, is telling you that you need to change who you are, and you in fact, are unable to do so. I think it's, you know, really one of the most insidious practices out there.
And to be clear, you mentioned that it doesn't work. Of course, you're going to have conversion therapists tell you that they have had, again, quote-unquote success stories, but you're saying the evidence does not stack up at all there.
It doesn't. In fact, the founder of one of the more well-known conversion therapy institutes has recanted, and in fact, himself come out as a gay man. The stories are legion about its ineffectiveness and the harm that it causes to our kids.
Well, and we say ineffectiveness, I should say that that starts with the premise that there is a problem to cure, and we've got to be very careful about that. And as Senator Hoylman has said,
absolutely,
you've got to be careful with the faulty premise. You also have looked at, and you're a lead sponsor on a Child Parent Security Act. Tell us about that.
That's a new bill that was introduced by me and an assembly member from Westchester named Amy Paulin. And the bill would essentially clarify parentage in the instance of gay and lesbian couples. In particular, though, it also legalizes gestational surrogacy contracts. And those are contracts that are made between parties where a woman agrees to carry a child for an individual or a couple. She is not related to the child biologically, but due to the wonders of in vitro fertilization technology, you can implant a fertilized egg into a woman, and she can carry the child to term and have a healthy boy or girl. I did it myself with my daughter, who's 3.5 years old, and it's another way that we recognize our LGBT families and protect them, but it's also protecting the women who choose to give this incredible gift to families. And frankly, Evan, there's a lot of straight couples who have had problems conceiving or carrying a child to term, and this is a wonderful opportunity for them too. It's actually legal in a number of states already, but New York, across the state, has terrific technology and fertility clinics, and we think we as New Yorkers should be able to take advantage of that and have surrogacy here in our state.
All right, surrogacy here. So how big of a change would that be for the state? What kind of an impact?
Well, I think, you know, there are about 1,600 surrogate births nationally every year. I think New York, you know, would contribute a large segment of that should surrogates be allowed to actually work in our state and contracts be signed. As it stands now, you have to go to California or Massachusetts or Connecticut and find a surrogate in those other states. It's important to the surrogate that she be protected, not exploited. It's also important that she have an environment, a supportive environment around her, and the intended parents whose child she's carrying, you know, are part of that environment. The other thing the bill does, I should add, is that when two women have a child together, obviously only one of the women is genetically the parent, this bill would clarify that both of those women are indeed the parents of that child. So there'd be no need for the second woman to go through a second parent adoption, and she would have the same rights as the biological mother as soon as the child was born.
Help me understand the argument against a bill like this.
The argument against the bill, I think, is similar to the arguments against extending transgender rights and what one of your, you know, one of the commentators you cited. I think it's based largely in people who don't know the facts and, you know, somehow view the unknown as threatening to them. But again, I think once people understand it and see that the earth, you know, will not come to a halt, and we saw that after marriage equality was passed in New York. Life goes on. The support for these types of initiatives will grow, and I think that's one of the challenges that the Pride Agenda, the Empire State Pride Agenda, has moving forward. And one of the things I'll be talking about in my address this weekend is the new horizon for civil rights and what's that mean for the LGBT community.
Yeah, I was just going to ask you to sort of wrap our conversation there. We're talking to State Senator Brad Hoylman, who's providing the evening's keynote on Saturday at the Empire State Pride Agenda's annual spring dinner in Rochester. The reception at 5:45 and then the dinner and program at 7 at the Rochester Riverside Convention Center. I'm curious to know exactly that. How what else you're going to touch on here, and just how you see the movement, I don't want to say, changing or evolving. You know, your opponents have said you've had very, very many victories, and that, some of your opponents of marriage equality have said, what's next? Has the movement succeeded? Are there more signposts out there that you're looking at? So what will you be talking about on Saturday?
I think I'll be talking about how, the Pride Agenda has been an incredible catalyst for positive change in our state, but we need to keep working to extend that to reach all corners of New York, to reach those 24,000 transgender individuals who don't have the same rights as you or I, who could be denied a seat at a restaurant, something out of a movie about the 64 Civil Rights Act may be happening here in New York State. And, I'll be talking about how it's about kids and families, a very traditional goals and values in our American society. But, gay and lesbian and transgender people want the same things as everyone else. They want a good job that pays well, security, in their workplace, and the right to live their life and to raise a family as they see fit.
Finally, Senator, Dan Hazeltine is the lead singer of a band called Jars of Clay, and when I was growing up, they were pretty popular. I think they're still pretty popular. Certainly popular, mm-hmm. Certainly popular in Christian music circles. And on Twitter a couple of weeks ago, he got on Twitter after being an event in Australia and started verbalizing or tweeting his thoughts on same-sex marriage and said, I can't come to a reason why it harms anybody. And is there a good argument for harm? And he thinks scripture is misquoted against it. Well, I understand you said that there's been a lot of, in your words, progress on this this issue, but they've lost thousands of fans, and he has had hate mail from conservative Christians who said that he doesn't understand the Bible and that he is missing it big time. So I don't know if that episode indicates that there isn't the progress you're talking about, or there isn't at least that mentality, but there is still some disagreement on this issue, don't you think?
There sure is, Evan, and there's, you could argue that there's a backlash against a lot of the success we've had here in New York. I convened a task force and had a hearing on hate crimes, and hate crimes against LGBT people have increased significantly in New York City and across the state, as have hate crimes against other minorities. I think it may have something to do with all of our success. The state controller is actually looking at that issue right now, and hopefully we'll be issuing a report soon. But there's a lot more work to do, and that's why organizations like the Empire State Pride Agenda are so important. Advancing equality, it's not just about winning legislative victories, which it is, but it's also about building support among different communities, whether it be law enforcement, the clergy, organized labor, business. Those fundamental stalwarts in our towns and villages and city that comprise our community. So the Empire State Pride Agenda has a lot more work to do before all of our success for the LGBT community puts it out of business.
State Senator Brad Hoyleman is the keynote speaker on Saturday at the Empire State Pride Agenda's annual spring dinner in Rochester. Took some time for us today on Connections. Nice to catch up with you, Senator Hoyleman, and we appreciate your time on the show today.
Thanks so much, Evan. Anytime.
Brad Hoyleman joining us live today. Thanks to Scott Petoniak and Heather Saffer, our earlier guests this afternoon on Connections. And we have had a number of questions about the music on the show, and I don't mention it often enough, but I'm glad to do it now and take a quick moment to mention the music on the show. The band is called Rah Rah Riot, and they have a localish, really a local regional connection. They Syracuse University connection, and also Geneva, New York, which is where our Finger Lakes Public Radio signal originates at WEOS, and we're proud to be on 89.5 FM all the way down to Ithaca and through the Finger Lakes on WEOS. Well, Rah Rah Riot has connections in Geneva as well. So our thanks to Rah Rah Riot for providing the music, and their label is Barsuk Records, and they were generous enough when we asked to say, absolutely, use it. You know, sometimes there's a question over rights and usership, etc., but this band with local ties, they were proud to do it, and we're proud to support them. If you want to check out this song, the name of the actual song is called Shadow Casting from Rah Rah Riot, and my hope is that someday in the not-too-distant future, we've got them in studio with us, and maybe they even perform a version of it live for us right here on the show on Connections. My two-year-old son thinks the name of the song is Connections, but the name of the song is Shadow Casting by Rah Rah Riot, and our thanks to Barsuk Records for them for sharing it with us. Tomorrow on this program, we conclude our month of Tuesdays looking at specialty beverages in our area. We've done the cocktail revival, we've done the Finger Lakes wine scene, we've done specialty third wave coffee, and tomorrow, craft beer in Western New York and Rochester. We're going to talk to the man who's writing the book on it, among other things. We're going to have a fun day tomorrow. Hope you enjoy this beautiful Western New York day today. I'm Evan Dawson. Thanks to Dave Campo. See you tomorrow on Connections.